So it's okay if it's annoying.
It's how you try to make yourself sound smart.
I should have told you that this was written by a non-academic and see how what kind of commentary. You know, found, like, oh, good idea.
Found in a crunchy Ziploc bag in a desert yard bush.
Yep. Scribblings in a notebook. My anarchist problem.
Inside of a toilet you in a
been,
squat.
You would have been like, oh, yeah.
No, I don't.
We do need a new social movement. We got to get on that train. And tap it.
No, I doubt it.
Okay.
but that's, I like that. I like to imagine, yeah, that.
Okay. 8. Anarchism requires a place for subjective transformation. This will not happen on the streets. We need to interrogate how subjective transformation is possible and not simply how we can rearrange the chairs on the front lawn while the greasy dude in the living room keeps farting and burping. Sounds like you understand that one better. Can you explain it to me?
Oh, there's like farts, and farts are funny.
Oh, okay.
Burps are also pretty funny.
Okay.
So that's kind of it. I'm not. Yeah, I don't get the metaphor, and I don't. Yeah, no, I don't get it. I actually don't get it. I just laughed because it's really funny to bring a fart joke into this. It's like feels really.
What, non-academic?
Oh, good point. Wow. They saved the whole thing?
At least there's a fart and burp joke.
Jesus Christ. Thank God.
Okay. I guess I feel like this is just another way of saying subjective transformation is like we have to change ourselves and our own in orientation toward the whole or something. I don't know. I kind of just agree. I think if it...
You gotta get inside, kick the farting guy out. Is the point? You gotta take the house? The front yard is no good.
I guess that is like... we just keep doing these superfluous things. And we're like, ooh, that's different. We're changing it. But like the substance of the thing is not changed. You can like rearrange your lawn furniture, but if the landlord's inside, then actually it would be kind of funny to write a short story based on this. You want to go ahead? I don't know how much time we have left.
Yeah, I can definitely write a short story in 2 minutes.
You're gonna really like the next one. You're gonna have no complaints.
Wow, that then probably you think I would like it if I didn't have complaints.
Good point. you got me there.
I guess I would disagree with the thing that the farting guy thing, because like I tend to push back when people make this argument that like, oh well, the thing we're doing isn't working, we got to do a new thing. Like, sometimes that's true. But also, things sometimes take a very long time.
Sure. Yeah.
And the kind of people that like are a people, or whatever, or see themselves as like a culture or whatever. They aren't like reinventing themselves every couple of years.
Yeah.
And so, you know, necessarily or whatever. And so to me, like, if what I'm trying to be, or part of the thing I'm trying to envision for myself, is being a part or like a participant in a culture of resistance to the world as it exists, like, I don't think that necessarily means like every 5 years we reassess, like, did we change the whole world? No. Okay. No more zines or whatever. You know, now this, now that, and we changed.
I think you're running away with this.
You think that's too extreme?
Yeah.
Okay, how would you... Where do you think the extremeness stops? What do you think he's actually saying?
Well, I don't really know, but I don't think that... You're just making a leap to say, like, we have to change everything. I don't think that's what he's saying.
I guess... Yeah, I'm responding to a thing that I do think that I do see happening, and I'm filling in the blanks because the statement is vague. But I do see this like sentiment where people are like, "Oh, we've been doing this for fucking 10 years and nothing has changed or whatever, so we need to stop doing it." And I think sometimes that's true, but that's not like if your goal is the transformation of the whole world or whatever. I'm not necessarily saying that's my goal or this person's goal, but like if that is your goal, then 10 years doesn't seem nearly long enough to get there. You know what I mean? But it does seem to be like people's frustration sometimes. And that's, I think, like, yeah, I'm like, that's what I'm trying to push back on.
You're like, we should sit on the lawn and let the house crumble.
Yeah, eventually the farting guy will die. And we can go in, open the window.
Okay, number nine.
Sure.
Get off the internet. This is a place for short engagement. It's a schizoid environment. Trolling online won't do anything to change the world.
I hate it. No disagreements. Completely agree.
Okay.
What about you?
Yeah, I agree.
Anyway, you can listen to this on anarchistwars.org.
Ten. We don't need an alternative to capitalism. The problem is worse. Capitalism is the alternative. It operates precisely as a logic of alternatives. This means that capitalism shifts into a much more difficult register, that of which Lacan called the not all and the real. The problem is not with finite structures of power or various strata of power, and everything is not reducible to power, so please stop that crap, but with infinity. We are like the child tossed into a game of Minecraft, and we have to survive. We have to carve a space for ourselves in this world.
So what's the proposal? What is the thing we should do? What do I need to do?
I don't know.
Well.
I agree, though, that we don't need an alternative to capitalism. Not to say that capitalism should exist. Well, do I agree? I don't agree. But I got confused. The alternative is the word I'm reacting to. Like, we
What?
need an end to capitalism.
So we, yeah, so it's not that we need a thing
To
that
replace it.
substitutes
Yeah.
that a thing that's like it that substitutes it.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
I
That's
mean
alternative.
that I would describe that as we don't need a society. That's how I would talk about that. We don't need a new society.
Okay.
That's, I don't know. But this person's saying it in a whole other way than I would. Maybe I don't fully understand, honestly. But that's okay.
Okay. I'm moving on because we're talking a lot.
We're only getting paid for an hour, yeah, we're running out of time.
The problem is not the Marxist category of totality, and the sociological imagination will get us nowhere in this infinite capitalist hellscape or landscape. Wow. We need a new orientation.
Wait, you just changed it to Hellscape in your
Yeah.
mind?
Yeah, I guess so.
That's awesome.
People are not any more alienated within a world. They are alienated from the world, and indeed from other possible worlds. We can look at all four of Marx's categories of alienation and refute them. For example, we are not at all alienated from the products of our labor. In this age of build your own Big Mac on s and social media, we are no longer consumers but prosumers, and hence doubly exploited.
Totally. That's what the Barbie movie was all about.
Is it?
I think so.
Really?
Yep. Remember, I was like on and on about it when it came out.
Restate
Oh, that like the Barbie movie is claiming that like the Barbie enterprise is ruled by men that are trying to push women into restricting categories of femininity, which are basically ones of like servitude to men, and that the kind of feminist thing that needs to happen is that Barbie needs to be selling a product that embraces woman, like womanhood as it really is, which is complicated and messy and not always pretty, and kind of the human aspect of being a woman needs to be packaged and resold, and then the consumer can be happy and satisfied. And it's, like, fucking terrifying. But, like, people love that shit and ate it up. And I fucking couldn't stop talking about it for, like, a month. What do you think about that? You remember me talking about it?
I do now, yeah.
I'm sorry. Sorry, no. I'm like this.
Well, I mean, I think that that's a good critique of second wave feminism. But, yeah. Yeah. I agree. I don't think that being able to decide how we sell ourselves is really, it's just the very surface of the problem.
Yeah, the selling yourself is maybe the issue.
Exactly.
More than, like,
yeah,
what the product is.
I'm going to read the last one.
Okay. Godspeed.
Anarchism is now a few voices on the internet or a small club at a conference or publishing house. We need the bold thinkers again. Take risks and rise up to speak about the world in which we are actually living. Wasn't that the same as number six?
Yeah.
Okay.
The big...
big thinkers.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know, it, I mean, if you want to say stuff that's provocative and there's a big idea or whatever, you should say, you should do that.
Yeah.
Rather than, like, maybe it feels a little weird that this person is like, we need the smart people to go out and say the big important thing. Like, I mean, seems like they're kind of trying to do that by writing this thing in a way that's, like, supposed to be provocative. Like, okay, do you, you know? But I disagree. Like, I did the other one that he said that's kind of the same thing. That, like, yeah, people should say provocative things and say dangerous stuff, but I don't think we, like, need a handful of really smart people that are kind of like prophets or something.
Again, well, it's just another way of saying that this person is bored of the idea landscape.
That he's in.
That he's in, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, yeah, I can't argue with that. It seems clear that he's bored.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And I have feelings like that sometimes. Like, well, there's, you know, nothing new. Everybody's trying to reinvent the wheel, etc. But that doesn't mean that I always feel like that.
But it just really, to me, like, really depends on, maybe you just don't like the ideas you're engaging with, you know? Because, like, again, to reference this book, because I'm reading the, Having Little, Being Much.
We've been calling it The Little Purple Book.
That's horrible.
You're welcome.
But... it's cute. It's a cute color. If you're gonna have a book, you abide by it. The color purple for the cover is what makes it.
I like that you're trying to make it about the color, and I'm talking about the other reference.
What is the reference? Little Red Book?
Yeah.
Oh. No, yeah, I get that. I'm just saying I'm down to have, like, a political Bible as long as it's purple, because it's cute.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
That's what I'm saying.
You're in solidarity.
With who?
With purple.
Yeah, sure. But in that book, which is really good and everyone should read it or face the consequences.
We all need to read it.
We all should be reading it right now. Fuck, I forgot what I was saying. Oh, no, yeah. There's just these things where, like, Lorraine Perlman is describing their life, like, within these, like, scenes. And specifically, like, the Fifth Estate. Detroit, like, anarchist publishing scene or whatever. And I was reading those, and it felt really heartwarming to be like, oh, these people are doing the same shit me and my friends are doing. And it's like, what? It's like decades ago. And they kind of have a different way of going about it, but, like, actually the activity seems really similar, you know? And I don't feel bored by that. I feel excited that I'm part of a lineage because I like the stuff I'm doing. I'm not bored by the thing. Like, maybe if I was, if I'm going to project a bunch of shit on this guy.
For the first time?
For the first time in this conversation, I'm going to slip up and do that. But it, like, seems like this is a bored academic who is bored of the life choices he's made. Mm-hmm. And he's writing that he's really bored by that. And, like, maybe if that was my experience and I, like, saw that many other people have made these boring choices, I'd be like, wow, this is terribly boring. I should do something else. But like, I'm just having a different thing. And the part of my life that is in engagement with a lineage of anarchy is like, doesn't feel boring at all. I feel awesome about it.
Mm-hmm.
I wish more of my life was like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. And it seems like it's going somewhere, at least in my life. So I don't know. I wish you luck, Dr. Rousseau, and who was his name?
Dude.
Russell? Fuck. Well, see, no one should write anything because you'll get shit on the news podcast. Make sure you don't say anything provocative. We'll just laugh at you and call you boring. Anyway, thanks for writing, Doctor. Do you have any closing thoughts or responses to this last piece, point, number?
No.
Hmm.
Just that I like that you like your life. That's nice.
Mm. What about you? Do you like your life? In terms of this, like, the thing you're saying that is, like, maybe repeating. Do you think the repeating bits are fun or are just frustrating or boring?
Sometimes they're fun, sometimes they're frustrating.
Hmm.
Depends on the context. To give you a non-answer, but it is the truth.
I guess if I think about it, I would agree with your non-answer. Yeah, it is more complicated than that.
Mm-hmm. But I get a warm, fuzzy feeling when I know that people who have inspired my thinking have lived similar lives, or like there's a through line through mm-hmm. that kind of thing. That gives me a warm, fuzzy feeling for the most part. And that, you know, means I'm pretty lucky. Because there's other kinds of resistance where people, like, the through line is a lot sadder.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the times that I felt sad or frustrated by the continuity or whatever, or the repetition,
mm-hmm.
was when I was really fixated on, like, kind of goal-oriented
mm-hmm.
things. And then I would, like, see and read all these people with who I agreed, and I'd be like, fuck, like, they lived their whole lives, like, really committed to this goal of revolution or whatever. For example, but, like, whatever, just to use that one. They lived their whole lives and they, like, died, you know? And,
mm-hmm.
And like, really, it must have been disappointing for them because it does seem like that was kind of, like, the main point of their life in a lot of ways. And so that, in like, I remember feeling really frustrated and sad by that.
But now there's kind of this thing that you're talking about, which is more lineage-based, right? Where people are thinking about living their life in such a way that the people who come after them might have it better, you know, like thinking of oneself as a lineage as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that, like, revolution is a process. I mean, if you choose to use that word, that it's a process and it's not a thing that you either attain or not.
Mm-hmm.
Should we call it?
What do you want to call it?
I don't know. The response to an academic's numbered list of frustrations.
Well, you know, maybe we could make our little lists of things that we'd like to see. And then we could submit it to other people in the collective to rip to shreds.
That would be good. I would, yeah, that sounds cool.
Okay.
I'm not gonna do that though.
Oh, okay. So it doesn't sound cool.
No, it sounds cool. We should do that. The collective we, the anarchist world, should all do that. But I'm going to do nothing. But if someone wants to do that in the comments, I would totally maybe read it. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
And thank you as well.
And thank you.
Mm-hmm. Have a good part of the day you're on. Goodbye.
This week's podcast is sound edited by Rosa Monte. What's New is written by Shizzle, read by Shizzle, and...
Alan.
We hope this podcast is useful to and fun for anarchists from the anarchist series. It's tearing me apart. It's ruining everything. Jure que ibas a cambiar. Me prometiste días atrás. Hoy te veo de la mano con ella. Si no dices la verdad, ¿cómo es que voy a confiar si soy un juego para ti? But I'm in so deep. You know I'm such a fool for you.
Cushion of ice and Curtain rises on another exciting adventure of the shadow. Here's something for you motorists to think about. According to a recent survey made in 50 American cities, nearly one-third of all the tires on the road need replacement right now. One-third of the nation's tires are so worn as to be dangerous. If your tires are among this dangerous third, don't take chances any longer. Get Goodrich Safety Silvertowns now. Silvertowns, you know, are really two great tires in one. On the outside, they have the amazing Lifesaver tread that sweeps wet roads so dry you can light a match on its track, that will give you the quickest non-skid stops you've ever had. And on the inside, they have the famous Golden Ply blowout protection. Thus, you get two great life-saving features in Silvertowns, all at no extra cost. The Shadow, mysterious character who aids those in distress and helps the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the unseen voice belongs. The only one who knows the true identity of that master of other people's minds, the Shadow. Today's story, Conversation with Death.
Popular place tonight. Aren't you folks dancing at all? Cranston, what about you and Margot? You're both beautiful dancers.
Well, the choice is with the ladies, John. But they seem to prefer the cool of the terrace and Dr. Latham's very interesting account of his experiences in the Orient.
We can dance most any time, but it's seldom one can listen to so distinguished a scientist as Dr. Latham.
Oh, thank you, Miss Lane. But I'm afraid I've been deadly dull.
That, Montgomery, is a sin that never could be laid at your door.
Oh, you're kind, Bernice. But if I've bored you, blame it on the occasion. Being guest of honor imposes the obligation of trying to be interesting.
Ignore the interruption of my rowdy husband, Montgomery. Go right on. Come here, John. Sit beside me.
I tell you, Monty, and you too, Cranston, You're both single. When you marry, don't permit your wife to dominate you as this little tyrant lords it all over me.
Well, you poor fellow, John. You certainly have the appearance of a henpecked husband.
Yes,
yes. Did you look in on the children, John, dear?
Yes. Billy insisted on your telling him his bedtime story. But I knew if I called you to the nursery, we'd never get you out again.
Did he go to sleep?
Right off.
And Betsy?
Doesn't even know either of us in the world. Sleeping the sleep of... No, I won't be trying.
Excuse us, please. Now the most vital part of the Porter household is taken care of. Sorry, go on, Montgomery. You were telling us about
the
Orient.
Please, I've monopolized the conversation.
But you know I never tire hearing about the Orient.
Yes, I know. I remember I once held the Orient out as a bait to induce you to run off with me.
Yes, DJ before John.
Renice traded that trip to the Orient for a trip to Hoboken. That's where we were married.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. 10 years ago. 10 years. I've covered a lot of ground in that time.
Geographically and professionally.
Yes, and I have you two to thank for that.
Well, do you mean, Doctor, that John and Renice share honors for your travels and your successes?
I'd say Renice does. At least she started the chain of circumstances. If she hadn't turned me down in favor of John, I shouldn't have run off to the Orient and buried myself in science.
Why, Renice, you've held out a romance on me. I never suspected there was ever anyone but John.
Well, I must say, Montgomery was a swell rival. No trouble at all. He went out on the first punch.
Well, it's a good man who knows when he's beaten, eh, Latham?
Oh, I don't know that it was a tribute to my common sense, Mr. Cranston. I rather suspect it was the result of a flaw in my character. You see, I'm not a fighter. I'm a brooder.
Oh, that's bad. Beware the brooder. More deadly than the fire that brightly burns and quickly dies is the brooder's smoldering fury which from little things arise. Remember?
Hey, I resent the implication that Renice is a little thing. She's certainly the biggest thing in my life.
Ah, what changes time can bring. John and Renice, this beautiful home, two lovely children. And, well, it all makes me feel so terribly old.
Yeah, it does seem as if John and Renice have found the true success formula.
Yes, John, you must give me the formula. If you have a minute, I should like to talk over old times with you before I leave.
Yeah.
I'm sure the others will excuse us.
Why, of course.
Oh, John, take Montgomery to the library, and I'll have the butler bring you something to drink. Margot, you and Lamont will dance, I suppose?
Yes, Renice, if I can speak for Margot.
Of course you can, Lamont. I was beginning to think I'd lost that fatal fascination.
Well, come along then, Montgomery. I've been looking forward to a little gadfest with you.
If I may be permitted the role of a fond parent, I'll accompany you as far as the nursery.
Always the doting mother.
See you later, Margot.
Yes.
Right.
Well, Lamont, why so pensive?
I'm thinking, Margot, that little jingle you recited, more deadly than the fire that brightly burns and... how does it go?
Quickly dies. Is the brooder's smoldering fury which from little things arise.
Yes, that's it. Silly little thing. Yet it's not without truth.
Oh, don't bother pouring, Jensen. We'll serve ourselves.
Yes, sir. Is that all, Mr. Porter?
Yes, Jensen, that's all.
Thank you, sir. Well, John... Long time since we've had a drink and a cigar together.
Yes, Monty. As I recall, we weren't on such friendly terms the last time, were we?
Oh, I suppose I acted the jealous fool when I learned that you and Renice were going to be married. But you know, John, youth and love is a more violent combination than whiskey and gasoline.
Well, a well-turned phrase, that. Drink, eh?
Oh, thanks.
You don't seem any the worse for your great disappointment. You've done well. I suppose you're one of our most successful modern scientists. Well,
professionally, I've done all right, I suppose. But my personal life drags far behind, John.
I've been hearing a lot about your progress. My niece keeps me posted. She reads everything printed about you.
Does she, John? Does she really?
I think she told me at last count 27 formulae bear your name.
28, to be exact.
28?
Yes, she wouldn't know about the last. It's still a secret. In fact, it will remain a secret. Oh, but enough of shop talk.
Hey, it's not fair to arouse my curiosity about something I'm never to know.
Well, oddly enough, it'll be no secret to you, John. I'm going to tell you all about it.
Well, I feel honored to be thus singled out.
Singled out. How right you are. John, you're familiar with the potion scene from Romeo and Juliet, I suppose.
Hmm? Oh, yes, yes. Juliet takes a potion to make people think she's dead so she won't have to marry a man selected by a family. Is that what you mean?
Correct. That potion was simply a dramatic device born in the mind of a playwright. But what man conceives, men contrive.
Oh, you don't mean to tell me you've actually invented such a drug?
Yes, John, I have.
Good Lord.
I have developed a drug that will bring about the physical characteristics of death. It can suspend all organic action, yet the brain will function, though death seems apparent.
Well, hold on a minute, Monty. At the risk of appearing stupid, do you mean that a person receiving a dose of this drug could be pronounced dead by a competent physician?
Pronounced dead and buried.
Yet he would be aware of everything that was going on about him?
Fully aware and totally incapable of helping himself.
Well, that's horrible. The most horrible thing imaginable. What sent you on a quest for a drug like that?
Hate.
Hate?
Yes. Strange that such an unworthy emotion should be the motivation for a great scientific discovery, eh?
I'm afraid I don't follow you.
Oh, it's quite simple, John. I said before that I was a brooder.
But you were joking.
No. I'm not the sort of coward who is afraid to face himself. I am a brooder. You're not, so you can hardly appreciate what that means.
But,
Now, perhaps I can explain. You've no doubt had a physical injury, a sprained arm, a painful cut.
Yes.
Well, you can well imagine how you'd suffer if there was no balm, no medicine to relieve that pain. How would it be if it were to go on and on?
Yes, I can well imagine.
A brooder suffers such pain, but the wound is in the soul. There is no cure except the balm of vengeance. A hate satisfied.
Do you mean to tell me that you hate somebody with such an awful intensity?
Yes, I do.
Oh, you surprise me, Monty. I never suspected you were capable of such a hatred. Why, it surprises me more that you voice it.
Well,
why not voice it? I know of no more contemptible hypocrisy than the pretense of entirely lofty emotions.
Surely you didn't invent this drug with the sole object of satisfying this desire for vengeance.
Perhaps not. But my hatred was eating away a part of me. I felt I could never be whole again while the sore persisted. I spent sleepless nights trying to wipe out this spirit cancer. That's what I call it, John.
And burying the man you hate alive would wipe it out?
Even the knowledge that I possess the power to completely express my hatred brought relief.
Really, Monty, you amaze me. Truly amaze me. I refuse to believe you mean all you say.
Oh, I see. This conversation distresses you, eh?
Yes, it does. I think it's the strangest talk I've ever heard.
Well, then we'll change the subject. Let's talk about something else. Oh, say, by the way, isn't that a recent photo of Renice on the mantle?
Why, yes, it was taken last year when she was made president of the Women's Progress League.
Oh, may I see it?
Why, certainly. I believe it's her best likeness. I must have an oil made from it sometime. Here you are.
Jove, she gets more beautiful every year.
Doesn't she? I know I'm the luckiest man in the world having a wife like Renice.
Yes, John, you've been fortunate, most fortunate.
Oh, the picture hardly does her justice. No picture could.
Well, shall we drink up?
Here's to her.
To her.
We let our drinks get warm. I'll pour another.
Oh, no, never mind. This one is quite adequate. Quite.
Mine tasted rather bitter.
Oh, perhaps you're not accustomed to that particular brand.
No, that's hardly the case. Oh, I suppose I can't stand these late hours as I once did. Money, I think I'll...
What's the matter, John?
I don't know. The glass just dropped from my hand.
Perhaps you'd better sit down.
Yes, I... Monty, get a doctor quick. I can't move. I'm paralyzed.
Yes. Yes, John, you're paralyzed. And no doctor can help you. Your body will assume the characteristics of death, and I will be a whole spirit again.
A drink. You drugged it when I went to get Renice's picture.
Yes. You permitted yourself the stupid conceit that nobody could hate you. But I do. I've hated you with an intensity that threatened to consume me ever since the day you married Renice.
You're mad, Montgomery. No sane man could do this.
I am free. Free for the first moment in years. My 28th formula will destroy you, John Porter, and I'll have nothing to hate anymore.
For Renice's sake, Montgomery. She loves me. You can't do this to her.
Soon she'll recover. I will help her through her grief, and I'll reap the reward of a consoling friend.
What do you mean?
Renice will be my wife.
Never. Never.
You took her
never.
From me. Now I take her back. That's the end, John Porter. Your heart will soon stop. You'll be pronounced dead. You'll cry out, but your voice will only be heard by yourself. And then you'll be buried.
Alive. Oh, good God.
Help!
There is no help for you.
Release. Release, please.
Already your voice grows weak. Now, the heart. That is the end, John Porter. Now you shall be a helpless witness to your own funeral.
Before we go into the second part of The Shadow's Adventure, here's a question for you. Who is it that today holds the same responsibility as the engineer of a fast train, the captain of a ship, or an airplane pilot?
The Shadow knows. The man behind the wheel of his car is just as responsible as the engineer, captain, pilot. Their first thoughts are for the safety of their passengers. Your first regard as a motorist should be for the safety of those who ride with you. For their sake, for your own sake, play safe. It pays.
And remember, motorists, safe motoring begins with safe tires. Switch to Goodrich Safety Silvertowns now. Silvertowns, don't forget, are the only tires in the world with the amazing Lifesaver tread. The tread that sweeps wet roads so dry, you can actually light a match on its track. Yes, this tread actually dries wet roads, stops you quicker, safer than you've ever stopped before. And more, when you put Silvertowns on your car, you not only get the greatest skid protection ever offered, you also get the blowout protection of the famous Golden Ply, both at no extra cost.
Isn't that Latham's car in the Porter driveway, Lamont?
Well, yes, it is, Margot. There's still a light in the room where John's coffin is. We'll have to wait here until it's turned off.
What time is it?
It's near midnight.
Then we shouldn't have to wait long. You had no luck with the medical examiner, did you?
Very little. I told him I couldn't bring myself to believe that John Porter died of natural causes. I had nothing to offer him in the way of proof to the contrary, so of course he couldn't hold up the burial simply on vague suspicion. But he did assure me he'd see that John's body is not embalmed.
Why do you believe that John may be the victim of foul play?
Well, Margot, I'm working entirely on hunch. Montgomery Latham was in love with Renice Book Porter, and still is, if I'm any judge.
Oh, that's silly of me not to have thought of that. Of course he shows it in every glance.
Well, there you have a possible motive for John's death. Latham might conceivably want him out of the way.
Of course, but how do you suppose he did it?
I'm only thinking of possibilities now, remember. But I once put a painfully wounded dog out of his misery in just the way John Porter might have been killed.
How, Lamont?
By hypnosis.
You mean that it's possible to kill a man by hypnosis?
Quite possible. It's a branch of hypnotic science I learned in the Orient.
Oh, yes. Latham spent many years in the Orient. You think he might have learned the science?
That's a possibility I can't overlook, Margot.
But if that's the case, what can you do about it?
If hypnosis stilled John Porter's heart, then it's possible hypnosis can start it again. In any case, I'm going to make the effort.
Look. Look, Lamont. The light's just gone out.
Yes. Come on, Margot. We've got another card to play in this frightful game.
Oh, I just can't believe it, Montgomery. John dead. Even there in his coffin, he looks so lifelike.
Yes, Venice. His face has lost none of its gentle character.
Liar. Hypocrite. Beware of Latham, Venice.
Perhaps it's only wish fulfillment, Montgomery, but he seems to smile encouragement to me.
I'm not dead, Venice. I can hear you. Can't you hear me, Venice?
You must go now, Montgomery. It's late. You've been so good staying near me and comforting me.
That's as John would wish it, I'm sure, Venice.
Yes.
No. Send him away, Venice. Oh, if you could only hear me.
I'm sure he wouldn't want me to desert you now. No, he'd want me to be near you.
Don't listen to him.
We three were such good friends.
Two of us loved you. Renice, you loved me once. You might again. Let me offer the protection. Shoulder the responsibility John was forced to lay aside.
Please don't.
Oh, Renice, hear me. Have nothing to do with Latham. The man is a fiend.
Montgomery, you've been a dear. I'm sure John would be grateful for the comfort you brought me.
I love you, Venice. I have always loved you.
And I, Montgomery, I feel closer to you than I've ever felt before.
Oh, no, Renice, you must.
That statement makes me very happy. You've given me reason to hope.
Renice, listen to me. You've got to hear me.
Come now, Renice. It's very late. You must try to get some sleep, dear. I've arranged for the housekeeper to sleep in the room next to yours.
Oh, I can't leave him, Montgomery. I want to be with him as long as possible.
Renice, my darling. I'll be near you always.
You must rest, Renice. You must carry on just as John would wish.
Yes. Yes, I must. I'll go to my room. Poor John. My poor John.
Renice, don't go. You must hear me. I've got to warn you against Latham. Renice, hear me. You must hear me. Don't. Don't. Oh.
All right, Margot. Step in. They're gone. You're not afraid, are you?
No. John was our friend. Why should I be afraid?
I'll need your help. Take his hands in yours while I open his eyes.
All right, Lamont.
You got it?
Yes. Yes, Lamont, I've got it.
Now place your finger on his pulse. Be on the alert for the slightest beat.
Yes, I will.
Good girl. Now we'll see if the art of hypnosis has anything to do with John's condition. John. John Porter. You must heed me and act as I command.
Yes. Yes, help me.
You are not dead.
No, no.
You sleep under an influence which I will destroy. As I speak, the blood flows through your veins. Your heart takes strength as I will it. And now, it begins to beat. 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 Respond, John. Respond.
I'm trying, Cranston. I'm trying, but you can't hear me.
John Porter, a force greater than that which holds you calls. Respond. Margot.
Yes, Lamont?
Any pulse action?
Not the slightest.
We'll try once more.
Don't give up, Cranston. Do you hear me? Don't give up.
John Porter, again I command you to shake the influence that shackles you. Move. Speak.
Yes, Cranston. I'm speaking. Can't you hear me?
Any luck, Margot?
No, Lamont, not a sign of life.
Well, Margot, looks like my guess is wrong.
Cranston, don't give up!
Isn't there still some small thread you might follow? John will be buried tomorrow.
No, not that.
Well,
don't let them bury me.
If there is a thread of thought, it hasn't yet occurred to me. No, Margot, I'm afraid we'll have to acknowledge the claim of the grave.
No.
John Porter is dead.
Into your hands, Almighty Father, we commend the soul of John Porter. Have mercy on him and succor his grieving widow. All right, men, lower the casket.
Oh, John. Oh, John, darling, I don't want you to go. I don't want to live without you.
Oh, Renice, please, you mustn't give away, dear.
Can't anybody hear me? Renice, lay for mercy.
All right, men. Fill in.
Renice! Don't let them bury me. Renice! No. No, please. Somebody hear me. Help me. Don't let them bury me. Help me. Don't. Don't. Listen to me. I'm not dead. I'm alive. Alive. Do you hear? I'm alive.
Lamont, just what do you expect to find in Lathan's personal effects? And why have you set today, the day of John's burial, as your deadline?
Call it a hunch, if you will, Margot. But I want to thoroughly satisfy myself that John died of natural causes. I wonder if there might be another place where Latham keeps his papers.
No luck in your quest so far?
No, confound it. I've searched through everything. But I'll try again. Keep watching the road, Margot. Latham may come home.
I hardly think so, Lamont. He must still be at the cemetery.
Here, watch this. Margot.
What is it, Lamont?
Look at it. It's in Latham's handwriting. Here, let me have that phone.
What are you going to do?
The Shadow's going to make an appointment at John Porter's grave with Police Commissioner Weston.
Come along, Renice. There's no use standing here staring at John's grave. We must go home.
There is no home now.
Mrs. Porter, may I offer my deepest condolences?
Thank you, Reverend Alston.
God bless you. Why, what does this mean? Who are these men that drive so fast into a cemetery? Why, it's the police.
Police? Come along, Renice. You mustn't be exposed to more excitement.
Montgomery, wait.
What? Hold on, everybody.
What
Hold
does
on.
This mean?
Don't anybody leave here.
Commissioner Weston.
What is the meaning of all this?
I don't know, mister, but I expect I will in a minute. Shadow. The Shadow here?
Yes, Commissioner. The Shadow is here.
Shadow?
In the shadows.
All right, then. Now, what's this all about? You phoned me to
Just
be here...
Just a minute, Commissioner. You men there, start digging as fast as you possibly can. Bring John Porter's casket up and rip the cover off. Hurry.
Go ahead, men. Do as he says.
Renice, are you going to permit John's grave to be desecrated?
What's the matter? What
Commissioner,
is all...
have your men keep an eye on Latham. He may try to escape.
Me? Escape? What does this mean?
It means that your fiendish plot to murder your friend is exposed, Latham.
Murder? Oh, this is ridiculous.
Commissioner Weston, look behind you. Back of that monument.
Over here?
That's it. I've placed an envelope and a small bottle there for you.
Montgomery, who is this that accuses you of killing John?
Some lunatic, I suppose, making a wild and stupid guess.
The Shadow doesn't guess, Latham. The Shadow knows. Find them, Commissioner.
Is what you mean?
Yes. That envelope contains a document describing a drug that Latham gave John Porter.
What? Why, this is preposterous.
You can't deny it, Latham. You wrote the document yourself. It's in your handwriting.
Renice, don't listen. The man is mad.
Go away. Don't touch me.
What's in the bottle, Shadow?
That's the antidote. If we hurry, it may save John Porter's life.
Save his life? Oh, hurry. Please hurry.
All right. Heist it up. Quick.
Don't let him escape. Grab him, Commissioner.
Here you. Here. Don't try anything like that.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to get away. I simply wanted to...
Well, you won't take any chances. Snap the bracelets on him, Horton. Take him away.
Okay, sir. The casket's up.
Rip it open, quick.
John!
Now, Commissioner, pour the contents of that bottle into John Porter's mouth.
Right. Here, lend a hand here, somebody.
Sure, Commissioner.
Now, hold his mouth open.
Yes. There you are.
Okay, Shadow, now what?
Now, we wait.
He groaned, I heard him.
Oh, John, speak to me.
Stand back, Mrs. Porter, don't touch him.
Look, he's finally through moving. He's alive.
Alive. Alive. Oh, my darling. My dearest, speak to me. Speak to me.
Why, his eyes are open.
John, it's me, Renice. You're saved, darling. Saved.
Renice.
Yes, John. What is it?
You can hear me.
Yes, dearest, I can.
Thank God. Thank God.
He's passed out.
John.
It's all right. Few hours in bed, he'll be all right again.
Okay, Shadow. I'll see that he's taken right home. And as for Lathan, we've got a home for him, too. But it won't have any curtains on the windows.
Well, this completes my job. So I bid you all good day.
Oh, Shadow, how can I express my gratitude? How can I thank you?
No need, Mrs. Porter. My reward is in your happiness.